Learn from parenting and career experts.
There is no such thing as perfect parenting.
Raising yourself up is important. You're not just raising your child.
Yes.
You and your wife are also raising your own selves as parents now.
Most parents were concerned that once the child grows up, will that child respect them anymore?
Children will learn from how you behave rather than what you teach them.
Welcome to Career Uninterrupted Podcast, brought to you by Off Experiences, production partner Done For You Podcasts.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Career Uninterrupted. I'm your host, Lochan Narayanan, founder and CEO of Off Experiences. Our guest for today is a lovely Krisha Sahijwani. Krisha is an ICF certified career and life coach for women and helps them unleash their highest potential to find their version of having it all. She's also director at a global SaaS company. She's a LinkedIn top voice and also a mother. With Krisha, we are going to explore her journey as a new mom as well, and also her experience of coaching other moms in the process. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Krisha, and thank you for accepting and being here.
Thank you for having me, Lochan. I'm very excited. As a new mom, nothing better to talk about than being a mom. And as a coach, nothing better to talk about than helping women unleash their potential. So this brings together two of my favorite topics. So I'm excited.
Awesome. So before we get into some of the set of, you know, things that I wanted to ask you about your experience as a new mom, but can you tell us a little about your life and your career journey? So you're double hatting. You're also, you know, director at a SaaS company. You're also working as a career and life coach. How did all of this come about and how did you get into coaching?
Very clearly, as you can see, it's not a very linear journey, I would say. So maybe a few things. One, I have been born and brought up in Bombay. So I think I spent a large part of my life here and I'm back here. I was always someone, even in school, I loved wearing multiple hats. So I was always touchwood good at academics and I genuinely enjoyed studying. I genuinely love learning. So I love studying even in the non-amazing way that we were taught sometimes, but I enjoyed it. But I still really loved extracurricular. So whether it was dance, I trained as a Kathak dancer. I was part of all the elocutions, the debates. I was house captain. I was always that person. And that continued in college. And I think what happens is sometimes because we are taught with a lot of books and with a lot of people telling you that you can only do one thing. So obviously when you were then choosing your career, it became, okay, now suddenly after doing all of this, now you choose arts, commerce or science. For me, it was honestly a very fairly made decision on its own because I wouldn't be able to do science because I didn't enjoy physics. I didn't enjoy the sight of blood. There's a lot of things I didn't enjoy about science. So it wasn't for me. I think I would have been great with arts, but because I was a good student, it wasn't an option at that time. It was considered as something you do if you don't have good grades, which was not the case for me. And so it was almost like the decision was made for me, right? That was commerce. And then again, within commerce, you know, once I was there, my junior college, again, I did everything. So all the festivals that you have in college. And again, it was time to choose now what you want to do in commerce. And because I was, again, a good student, it was just chartered accountancy. Honestly, there was no other option. I don't even think I had to make a decision. It was made because if you're a good student and you're doing commerce, you're not doing science, it's CA. So I did CA. I think that's slowly when I also started. I don't even know when I go back to this decision. I was, again, I enjoyed studying for CA, which is not the case for many. But I quit when in the middle of my IPCC exam. And I say in the middle because it was literally in the middle of the exam. I gave three papers and it wasn't even that they went badly. And I actually ended up passing those papers. But I knew what comes next, that after this, there's articleship. In this, that I'm going to sit on this desk and do this auditing and tax that I don't enjoy. And everyone, you know, that was the narrative. You're doing it well. People find it so tough to pass. Just finish it off. It's just 3 years. And I knew then it'll be just the first job. And then your life is over for the next decade at least, right? And I just didn't want to do that. So it was fairly impulsive. It would be wrong in a way to take credit for that, because I don't know how it happened. It was very impulsive. I just followed what I wanted to do. I listened to myself somehow at that point. And the interesting, crazy thing was, it wasn't even that I said, you know, I'm not going to do CA because I want to become this and I'm going to go after this. I had no idea what I wanted to do.
Correct. Yeah.
And I remember I called Just Dial because I started saying, okay, what do I do? Oh, I enjoy weddings. So maybe I'll become a wedding planner.
Really?
And I called Just Dial. And that was, okay, for those of you who are listening who don't know what Just Dial was at that time, when you want a number of places, you call Just Dial, right? And I got names of companies who were, and I had very specific criteria even then. It needed to be a smaller company so that I had something to do. It also needed to be close to my house so that I didn't have to travel a lot. All these stupid criteria, and some not so stupid. And that's when I got this job that basically just paid for my travel, right? It's an event company, and I hated events because I'm not a night person. I'm a morning person. I hated almost everything about it, but I did it for 2 months. And luckily, they had her sister company that was doing public relations. And I met the boss there who was, and she was my first like lady boss. I hate the name, but like that was my first company and she was amazing. And she still is, she's still a friend. And I was already in awe. And they were doing music festivals and I was obviously 19 at the time. And I got to do like public relations for Swedish House Mafia and A.R. Rahman and all of this that was coming. It was a really small team and she was amazing. And because I loved working and I loved once I take up something, it's like, let's give it my best. She was really happy with me. And obviously I came I was a 19-year-old at a very low salary doing all of these things. So yeah, I think everyone was happy. It was a win-win. Yeah. And I got to do all of this and I loved it. And again, I think the narrative was, I just didn't follow that narrative that, okay, now that I'm enjoying this, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Once I reached the two-year mark, I was there for almost 3 years. Once I reached the two-year mark, I started to feel that feeling, which I know for myself now, that, okay, what's next? I saw the people at the high positions in that company and in other companies in the industry, and I didn't want that. So I was like, what am I going after, right? Because, and then again, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I said, okay, social media makes sense. So I was quite, you know, I had a lot of these moments in my life. I think maybe that's why I became a career coach eventually, where I didn't know what I wanted to do, right? So that happened. And then I went to finally did social media. Again, at a startup. Again, I enjoyed the work I was doing. I actually got offered a promotion really soon. But I was quite lost while doing it. Also, I said, let's just do it. Let's gain a skill. But I already knew going into it, not unlike with PR, that this is not something I can do the rest of my life. I did it. And then I said, okay, now I need to do something different. And then I took a small break and I finally went abroad to study. So I went to Singapore to study international business. Even my degree was international business because I could not choose finance, marketing. Well, I didn't know what to choose. So I chose international business. That's truly how it happened. It was amazing. I had a very diverse crowd. And I think that was one of my criteria. It was well accredited. That was another one. And I loved it. Again, I think when you come from India, especially, we do such a good job with academics. I don't know about good job, but we do a really good job in like being able to study. So when you go abroad, even though it was my master's, I think I found it fairly easy. But I found it very interesting. Like there were the pieces of negotiation and these things that you don't study otherwise, which I love these subjects. So I did well and I got a taste of what it was like to be abroad. I met a lot of people from France. A lot of my cohort was from France. And I said, I want to now go to France. And that was my next thing. And so I moved. I was for 6 months before my master's ended. I applied to I don't even know how many jobs in France. Obviously, I didn't know French. So that was tough. And finally, I got these two options and I chose Sociable, which is where I still work. And that's when I moved to Paris alone. I obviously didn't know anyone, didn't know the language. It was a really small company at that time, less than 10 people. And I was one of them at that point. And then I worked there. I really enjoyed my experience there, but I knew I wanted to come home. And luckily, they also had dreams eventually to, you know, become a global company and expand. And kind of, I think our dreams merged and it was a win-win again. And I came back and I opened their office in India. That's what I've been growing and doing with them for the last 6 years. So that's what I do with my day job. Again, because I love doing multiple things, the good thing is that Sociable, I keep doing different things. So that still keeps me very engaged. But I then became a coach, which happened 3 years ago. And it started with I was always told you should become a therapist or, you know, psychiatrist a lot of times growing up, because I don't know, maybe I would listen to people or I don't know what it was. There were a couple of things, but I didn't enjoy a lot of things about it, though I loved some things about it. So when I came about coaching, it was like, oh, this is it, because I love the future focused rather than the past focused. I love the goal setting while still being able to create that safe space for people and, you know, doing that. And it merged before that. I was always passionate about, you know, empowering women, and this kind of merged those two things. I started as a coach for everyone and slowly realized I want to coach women, and that's, you know, where I'm making the most impact. That's what I want to be doing. And so I've been running my coaching business on the side. And that's what I do a lot now, because even at Sociable, I've become, you know, a director now, so I can manage both more easily. And I write, so which is how LinkedIn happened. And I published a book, and that happens on the side.
And in all of this, you also went and had a baby.
Yes.
So I think you had one full-time job that you're missing out,
yes.
You know, the other one had. Your story sounds very relatable. I think I've been someone like that myself. And, you know, I completely resonate with what you said, because I think growing up, there were only certain directions that you could think of when it came to career. And somewhere down the line, thankfully, meandering, I managed to at least land as close to what I wanted to do. But a lot of people still stay where they are, and, you know, they're not able to make that switch and shift. And I think coaching, therefore, is something that I'm also extremely passionate about, because it's something that has helped me, and I feel, you know, it also helps others in the process as well. So just taking this ahead, you know, you said you work a lot with women, and I know you also work a lot with women who are either planning or women who are new mothers and so on. So did that happen naturally? And what are usually like the kind of conversations, or what do they typically come to you for in some sense?
I think, so there's a word, right? There's a word called matrescence. I don't know if many have heard of it. It's very similar to adolescence. Adolescence, everyone knows, because it impacts everyone. Matrescence only impacts moms, so we don't speak about it a lot. It's the idea that when you are in the process of having a baby, everything changes. Okay, so it's very normal that you start questioning a lot of things. And this is where a lot of my conversations with these women happen. They're suddenly questioning, is this the work for them? They're suddenly questioning, do they want to work at all? They're questioning, you know, or do they want to have kids? Do they want to have more than one kid? What do they believe in? Everything is undergoing change. And it's not just with work, but you start feeling these questions come up and these changes happen with work, with your love life, with, you know, your partner, with your friendships, with your family, with yourself, your body. So literally there's a 360 degree change that happens. Now, the problem is the narrative that is sold to people is you have to now bounce back. You know, that's a word I hate. It's used so much. So what we're essentially telling women is, when you're starting to feel like this, now you push it in and you go back to what you used to feel and what you used to look like and what you used to believe, which makes no sense, right? You don't go through something this magical to go back to who you used to be. What's the point? You want to be a better version of yourself. So I think that's where I help women. And when, you know, these conversations go out, is we kind of partner and say, okay, it's change is happening. We're not saying it's not happening, or we are not trying to push it away. Let's sit with it. Let's evaluate what is changing, what is working for us, what's not. What does our new belief system look like? What do our new values look like? What is still the same? What do we want to do from here? And now how do we get there? It's also about changing the narrative that just because all this change is happening, it doesn't mean you now desire less or need to desire less. It's different, not less, which is the key. Because what happens is, when you're in the brink of all of this, and then people are telling you things as well that maybe you can't do both, or you do both, but it's normal that you're this exhausted and you hate everything. Right? Both those versions are not good versions. So you go on either of, you either accept it or you quit and you do one of those things, and maybe that's not what you want. So that's the kind of conversation we have, where we sit down and, you know, build awareness around what is it that they really want outside of all the noise, and then how do we get there?
Right. So I wasn't familiar with this term, matrescence, and I know this came up when we spoke last, and it was a very interesting term for me, but on a very different space, because we work a lot with new moms. I think one thing that I realized is that the minute women have the child, they have get absolute clarity on the work, you know? So they suddenly are like, I don't like this career at all. And I think because the trade-off in their head is so clear, you know, I have to leave a crying child behind to come and do something which I hate. I don't want to do this anymore. And also somewhere, you know, all this time, maybe like you correctly said, maybe they've been suppressing it. And maybe everyone's been telling them, look, you suck it up and, you know, you do this. And who likes their job kind of a thing. And I'm reminded of, sorry, but I'm just reminded of this one episode where Chandler comes and tells everyone that, so who likes their job? And everyone says, well, I love my job. And he's like, what? Like, I thought it's normal for people to not like what they do. So it comes in with a certain bit of, you know, clarity for them. And then they start kind of questioning a lot of pieces.
100%. It's that place. That's why I see it as such an opportunity that you're given, because you go through a transformation that you can no longer push. You have to deal with it because it's come so, like with postpartum, it comes like here that you can't breathe unless you change it. So that's why you have more people, you know, taking these steps. And luckily now we have these tools of coaches and, you know, these kind of things that can partner with you and help you, and you don't need to push it down so hard that you're going down with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So how has your journey changed? You know, I know you said you've been with Sociable for over 6 years and you started out with them, I'm guessing, when you were still single, and now you're, you know, you've gone through different life stages in the process as well. How has your journey changed, or maybe even your outlook towards career change post becoming a mother?
Yeah, I think for me also, it was gradual. And but Matterson's kicks in for people at different stages, right? For some people, it kicks in even before they plan a baby, because now their head is already there. So they're thinking, of course, the biological parts come after. For some, it's during pregnancy. For some, it's, you know, when you literally give birth. And for some, it kicks in a month, few months after. So it's around that range, right? For me, the thing was, maybe because I was more aware of all of this, so I'd already read up on all of this, so none of it was a surprise. I was sort of anticipating it. Because I was anticipating it, I kind of pre-planned a lot of these things. So even before I decided to start trying to have a baby, I'd already decided that, okay, I was doing sales a lot in my current job. I was heading a lot of the sales directly. And I already had a conversation with my CEO saying, you know, I am going to start planning to have a baby soon. And I think it won't make sense for me to carry the load completely of the sales. It won't be good for me or the company, because if I miss, even it's very time specific, right? Like a lead comes in right now, I need to reply right now, which is, I already know, not the most suitable thing for me as a new mom in the early year. So I had that conversation even before anything happened. So that's a change I made, where I hired, I trained, I did all of that while pregnant. But then by the time I was giving birth, I had someone who was trained to take up that part of my job. And again, it didn't mean less. So it doesn't mean I'm doing less at Sociable now. It just means I'm doing different. So I am still supporting all the big sales conversations, because of course, as a director, I'm part of those conversations, but I'm not taking on the daily steps of it, right? But at the same time, I'm now, you know, spending more time on the marketing. We've launched our podcast at Sociable for Asia. We're doing, you know, a lot of these different things that now I'm taking up as projects, because I can do them more flexibly. I'm still working the same hours. It's just that nothing is going to be a crisis if I'm not available that minute every single day. Right. So I made those sort of changes. I wanted to publish a fiction book, and I made sure it published in, you know, December, and I gave birth on 1st March. So it was right like two months before. So I made sure that was done, because I wouldn't have the bandwidth to write a book this year. I'm being realistic with myself. Next year, I'd like to write a second book. But this year, I didn't even attempt it, because I knew it just doesn't make sense to add it to my cart and make myself feel like it's something I need to be doing when I don't have the bandwidth for it. With coaching as well in the early months. So I made sure I was only taking a limited number of clients, because I wanted to make sure I'm making a lot of impact with whoever I'm taking. So I was very clear on the timings I would work for that. So which available slots I had and how many people I could take. And gradually I have been able to now increase the number of people I can take. Which means obviously if I was not in this situation, I would do paid marketing. I would maybe get more clients, I would say yes to more clients, and maybe I could double revenue, triple revenue, whatever that was. It just wasn't my goal this year. So I think that being very clear with what are realistically your goals so that you feel a sense of achievement, you don't feel like, one, I didn't want to feel exhausted. I was very clear. I mean, beyond the normal that you're bound to feel as a new mom. But I didn't want to feel burnt out. I didn't want to feel like, why am I doing this? I really enjoy working and I wanted to retain that. So now my goals will increase and change for the next year as I sit to do it right now. But I think that's something that worked for me.
So there are two parts from your, you know, from this response, and I'm going to pick up both separately. So the first, you said that you went and spoke to your manager about it, right? This is something which I have spoken to a lot of women who are at that stage. So they come to me talking about career, and you know, that's how Off Experiences also came about, because a lot of women would come talk about their career. And in the second conversation, they're like, actually, you know, I'm thinking of having a family. Now, my career in the light of that, what can I do? And so on. And I realize a lot more women are actively thinking about it, and they're not just like leaving it, you're going with the flow in that sense. But this is one part that they're extremely reluctant to do, because there is this perception that if I go and tell someone that I'm planning, even if I was going to put on a project, because planning doesn't mean it's going to happen like the next day or the next month. And for some people, it might take some time. And then, of course, you're still another like 8 to 9 months away from, you know, going on your maternity leave. So effectively, you're saying a year and a half kind of a time frame before I'm actually going to be away for 6 months as a thought process. But for a lot of organizations, or they feel that if I go and say this, I will start getting sidelined. I will not get those projects if there is a new work that's coming my way. If I was put on the fast track list, they will take me off that list, and so on and so forth. How do you fight, or do you fight this? Is a question that I want to ask you and get your thoughts on.
So I think first we need to accept that the reason they feel that way is because it happens, right? I speak to a lot of women where, unfortunately, there have been situations where they are then told they're not getting the promotion because, you know, they didn't perform as well. It's fake. Or, you know, there was no complaint about performance before. Or their probation is not being extended because they don't feel like it's a fit. You know, a lot of things, because it's early times, right? I think there are two parts to it. One is the actual environment, which is what I'm speaking of, like being able to find a culture, a place where you can tell it's supported and you can see it. It's, of course, it's in policies, but you can also see it. Like in my company, I'm not the only one. Like right now, I know two people on Mato, and we are a small company. We are 100 people globally. And I know people within that 100 who are also on maternity leave now, someone who came back before, going on to new roles, still having projects, still being recognized, being appreciated. You can see it. It's not hard to see, right? So one, I think, is finding the right culture. Because at the end of the day, I always like to give this example, you know, of sometimes if you're trying to not eat junk and you're trying to not do it, yes, your willpower plays a big role. But if you don't keep the junk in the fridge, it's easier, right? When you wake up in the night, if you have to order and then if you go down and all of that. If it's right there, it's harder to fight. So you're expecting yourself to fight more. So I think having the right environment, which makes this easier, is number one. Right? And they're not all of them. And we have to be realistic about that. Not all companies have this culture. It's changing. It's changing for sure, but it still happens. I had a conversation with one of my clients yesterday, and this is a conversation I've had yesterday. It's happened as of yesterday. And again, it's gray area. She can't do anything, but it's just, it happens. We have to accept that. So one is finding the right culture and believing, a lot of belief systems come there, believing that you deserve that. Right? And you can find that it exists. You deserve that. If you've been sold the narrative that all companies are like this and it's just going to happen and you just have to suck it up and that's just how it is, then you won't even look, or you won't look with the right attitude, and the chances that you're going to find and attract that culture are going to be low. Right? So there are two parts to it, that environment and your belief system to find that environment. Now, on the practical standpoint, something I did, and again, no one size fits all, which is what I love about coaching. You talk and you figure what works for you. But what worked for me is I had this conversation before I started trying to have a baby, right? For me, what that gave me was, one, I was quite sure I was in the right culture and in the right environment. So I had a feeling that it would work out. However, I wanted to do it before I was in a position where I couldn't if things didn't go the right way, I would not be able to do much about it. Because, of course, once you're already in that position, it is harder. So that was what worked for me, to have that conversation while I still had power and control as well. So I don't know if that would work for everyone. Again, as I said, it's a conversation and you figure out what works best for you. But it is something that worked for me.
No, that's a great idea. And I think this is one of the things I keep telling organizations, saying that, look, you may have one woman today, but there are hundreds who are looking at that one woman who is going through the stage and seeing how are you behaving or what are you doing to her? Because subtly they are making up their mind if they want to stay with you. They will not tell you the reason why they're quitting, but they might just find, they'll say, no, we're going to another company. They're going to another company probably because the other company is how they're seeing that, you know, will potentially help them during this phase and during this time period, et cetera, et cetera.
For sure. And I have to say, just to add that quickly, my husband actually chose his job that when he switched his job much before we were planning to have a baby, but he knew that in the near future, we will be thinking about it. He actually looked at the paternity leave when he was choosing his job. And I think, of course, women are doing that much more. So
no, and I think that's a very great, you know, very good point that you're saying, that when we as individuals start asking and demanding this of the organizations, of the leaders, of managers, or whatever, that we start to say, it's almost like demand supply. You know, you start asking and then suddenly they're like, look, we might start losing people because of this. We might as well put this in place, you know, at least put some practices and policies that can support this and not just make it a tick box exercise and so on.
I just want to add quickly there on the other side of it, Balushan, I think we have to sometimes just realistically also look at it from the company's standpoint, right? I think companies are more likely to do it if we showcase value before. It's just easier, right? For them, they've seen, they know you're valuable and they can trust that you will have the discipline to, if you're saying you can manage this, you will. And then you need to live up to that side of the bargain, right? At the end of the day, 6 months, they can do it, of course, for free, right? After that, it's a business. If we look at it from a business standpoint, I have had this conversation with, another founder who runs this company for housewives. And she, you know, talks to them on how she tries to get them jobs, basically remote jobs, etc. And she's spoken to me about these situations where you get them the job and then either they're not showing up for the interview or, you know, they are not delivering on the output, etc. So we need to also balance it out, saying that, of course, this is going to happen. The companies need to do it. But at the same time, we have to live up to our end of the bargain. It's not paid vacation after 6 months. 6 months is not a vacation at all, but it's not paid leave. I mean, it would be a great world if we were just paid to take care of our babies, but it should be. But that doesn't happen after 6 months, right? So from a business standpoint, if you want to continue to grow and get that promotion and get everything, we also need to showcase value.
I think you've touched on a very important point, because somewhere either women themselves feel that I'm going to take a step back and take it light, or whatever, you know, they are defining it. Now, taking it lighter doesn't necessarily mean, you know, delaying on my timelines or the outcome or what I have committed to. It probably means that, okay, earlier I was doing 5 projects, maybe today I'll only do 2. But at least those 2, I have taken complete ownership of it. I'm, you know, delivering quality, et cetera, et cetera. And that's a very, very good point that you've brought in. And maybe it works in such a scenario and in both ways. We just take it as a blanket piece, but we also have to put some bit of accountability on the women as well. Completely agree. So, you know, has your coaching conversation changed after you've become a mother?
I think maybe something that has changed, I don't know again whether it happens organically, as I'm just coaching more mothers. So I think that because of that, the conversations, of course, I don't coach only moms. I coach a lot of young girls as well. You know, that's why I like to say that it's about figuring their version of it all. I don't think my conversation has changed, but my passion has increased, if that makes sense. I was always really passionate about the subject much before I knew what having a kid even means, right? I used to run something called the Pink Thread, which was a non-profit initiative where we used to interview women in India who were working and who were moms and juggling all of it and how would they do it and, you know, talk to them about it. I had interviewed Radhika Gupta and a lot of these women even before they had kids and just, you know, talking about the subject. So it was something that lived in me. You know, I guess you have those things for everyone, those beacons of light that just there. And it's obviously, now that I have been through it myself, it's just further cemented. So the passion has just become greater, if that makes sense.
You know, so I know you also mentioned in your previous response that a lot of women, while may want to speak to their managers and their environment, and if they're not conducive, may not have an option to kind of move out of that environment. Have you had such kind of an, you know, client that you've worked with? How can you, I'm just giving a general, I know every response can be different, but in a general sense, how can they navigate that phase and that time frame? Because maybe I started planning and, you know, I was lucky and, you know, it just happened right in the first go. And now I'm suddenly like, look, I'm already there. I don't know if I should be looking out for a job because I have to disclose that, you know, I'm expecting, or, you know, in 2 months they will know, and it can lead to many other things as well. So what should it be? How should they plan this? And timing it perfect will never happen. So how should they think about this? And in case, you know, their organization, they feel is not being supportive or giving them the feels that it's not going to be supportive because no one will say it out loud. How should they go about this?
I think first is getting the grip on the actual awareness around the situation. I've had situations where I was coaching a mom of three and she was in a job that she was not happy with. She felt like she was not being able to be there with her kids as much as she wanted to. And this was not obviously immediately postpartum, but she had three kids, so houseful and young kids. And she just felt that that was the only option, right? Like, I have three kids, I need to support them. I cannot ask for anything beyond this. I've asked, they've not really responded in the way I'd like. And I don't think there's anything else available that I could move to at this rate, that she had something else going on and within that timeline, right? We spoke enough about it that there was a lot of belief systems we uncracked, we changed. And she actually did end up finding a job that was remote, but flexibly remote, not just what, I mean, you know, in her industry, full remote was actually not possible. So there are these situations, but she managed to find a way to be there when her kids came back from school. We found these moments, and then we actually figured a very flexible situation that made her feel like she was there for the important moments while still being able to do a job she liked. And there was a lot of, again, she felt like, I need to at least get the job that's paying me the most. I cannot even think about doing a job that I really love, you know, in the middle of all this. Now I can't have that expectation, right? That was the thing. And luckily she did. She did end up finding a job. She's got an education and something she really loved. And so I think first is just getting a real grasp on the situation, because we create a world in our mind and then that becomes our reality a lot of times. So that would say that is step one, which is crucial. Now, once that is done and you have the actual understanding, okay, my company is not actually supportive, I don't have this, I would say now take a firm understanding of what is going on, right? This is what the company does. This is what my money situation is. This is how much money I need. These are all realistic things that we need to understand. Do I have anything on the side already? Do I want to build? Is there something I always wanted to do that I'm not doing? Are there any other options I've not looked at? What are the skills I have? That, you know, there's a lot of these questions. So doing that whole analysis then puts you into that, as you said, no one size fits all, but puts you in that understanding, okay, now this is what I need to do. Maybe the decision is we speak right away, and then we actually do a switch, or, you know what, we don't have the conversation now, but we also build something on the side. There's a lot of different ways one can go about it, depending on where they are. Like, is someone very young? Is someone much older? Do you have parents? Do you have other responsibilities? You know, it's a lot of things. Do you take a gap year that you always wanted to? Can you afford it? It can be anything. There's no one size fits all. But it's doing the actual analysis and taking the driver's seat. And it starts with believing there are options.
Mm. So being more intentional about what the next few years, A, with the child and with your career, would you, at least at this point of time, would want it to look like? And like you said, maybe it changes once I have a child and I'm like, I don't want to have a career at all. And that could also be it. But rather than just being going with the flow and hoping like everything else will just fall into place, being more intentional about it is
100%. You know, it goes such a long way. Again, I was having a conversation with another potential client of mine yesterday, and we were talking about what we're going to discuss and where she was, and she's due soon, right? And that's the situation she was in, and we were talking about how now is a good time to figure this out before you give birth, again, if you're already there, it's okay. Figure it out, right? This is just the better situation. But if you do it before, what happens is you say, okay, 6 months, I can't do anything. And then you're going to get into it. It's not as planned. It's not like the 6 month mark hits and then suddenly now there's nothing to do at home, right? With the baby, just there's a lot you're still figuring out. Exactly. Now there's food to eat. You're not the only food, but there's just a lot going on. So I think what happens is, imagine this. Let's say suddenly 2 months down the line, 2 months postpartum, now you feel you have an hour in the day, right? If you already have a plan, you know how to use that hour and you'll put it into use. You already know, I want to go for a walk, or I want to write the first chapter of a book, or I want to apply for jobs and see in this area, right? You know what you want to do. You have clarity. You'll use that 1 hour. If you don't know what to do, you will spend that 1 hour not knowing what to do, because what do I start with? Okay, now the baby is napping. Now what? Like, I have so much to do and I end up doing nothing, right? I sit down and scroll my phone because I don't know what to do. So it just passes. That 1 hour will go like this. So I think that's what that being intentional gives you. It, instead of going with the flow, it doesn't mean hustling 24/7. You know, that's the wrong version of it. It just means you have clarity so you can take intentional action at the pace you want. It actually gives you more control.